Mays, Vince Gitadonic, 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. A lot to discuss when it comes to the Tennessee Titans, and no better person to help us right off the hop than Paul Gaharsky of Paul Gaharsky. Paul, we will, of course, get to the news of the day that Brian Callahan has ceded play-calling responsibilities to quarterbacks coach Bo Hardegree. But I actually want to get your thoughts on something that broke roughly 15 minutes before we came on the air. The Tennessee Titans have traded Jarvis Brownlee and a 2026 seventh-round pick in exchange for the New York Jets' 2026 sixth-round pick. Your thoughts on this deal, and is this the first domino to fall in a fire sale for the Titans?
Well, it doesn't seem like a fiery sale move because the second-year guy. So in that regard, it's weird. And the return's not terrific because they spent a fifth on him, and they're giving up a seventh. They're getting back a sixth. So it's a little peculiar. But I think you know, they were disgusted by the penalties in the first game. I think his public response to it was like, I'm not really going to change a lot. And Denard Wilson was not pleased, said it's unacceptable. Now, he was cleaner, but this is the kind of style player that he is. And I think they must have concluded that he's not going to adapt sufficiently to what they want him to do. And decided that maybe it's not sending a good message to the rest of the DBs and the rest of the team, really. Maybe there was an incident, I don't know. But the timing's peculiar and fast. To start a fire sale with a second-year guy as opposed to one of the older guys who would bring more value, it's kind of weird, though. He's awfully cheap contractual-wise, so the Jets aren't inheriting much there. And some of the costlier guys, a team's more likely to trade for later when they don't have to take on as much contractually.
Paul, Brian Callahan said he had zero disappointment, quote unquote, in his play calling, but still handed those responsibilities over to Bo Hardegree. Callahan took ownership of this decision. He was asked about Mike Borgonzi's and Chad Brinker's involvement in this decision. He seemed to downplay that. How much influence do you believe Borgonzi and Brinker had in the decision for Brian Callahan to no longer be calling plays?
Yeah, I think probably pretty significant. I mean, if he had zero disappointment in his play calling, well, what are the odds he's going to have zero disappointment in somebody else, Ben? The other guys would have to meet this high standard he set that the rest of us don't necessarily see. I mean, I think he calls plays that get people open. I don't think he calls them in great sequence or with great feel. So maybe Hardegree will be able to better do that with Brian Callahan's plays. I mean, they're all in the room that designed the plays during the offseason and adjusted the playbook, and they're all involved in putting together the game plan every Tuesday. But, I mean, he just keeps saying at least one thing that kind of works to offset whatever he's saying that's good. So you can say I'm not disappointed in my play calling, but certainly hasn't gotten us the results that we're looking for. I mean, maybe that's inherent, or he thinks that's inherent in what he's saying, but I don't know why that's a necessary add there, and it makes me feel like he was nudged to do it. But whether he's nudged to do it or not, I think you're looking for some level of shakeup. This isn't the level of shakeup the fan base is looking for, but it's something. They're going against a team that's been equally bad. Unfortunately, the worst thing about the Texans is their offensive line. And I think the defensive play caller doesn't have much to work with there in terms of attacking a bad offensive line. So we'll see. I would expect a better offensive performance. Everybody, whenever a change like this is made, the unit generally plays better. You know, when it's an interim head coach, the team usually plays better in the first game for that guy. So I would expect a boost for a week at least.
Now, his next step, I believe, is out the door if this thing doesn't get turned around, not even from a schematic standpoint, but just the management of the team. If it doesn't get better, I think his next step is out. And that's unfortunate considering the roster that he has. But, Paul, do you think the choice to go with Bo Hardegre as opposed to Nick Holtz was because Bo had experience calling plays there with the Raiders? And even though they've been together for a while, he and Nick hasn't had any experience at ever calling plays, not to my knowledge.
No, he called plays, I think, for a year at UNLV when he was there, but it's not the same. Hardegre had a pretty good 9-game run with the Raiders, and I think he's closer with Cam, you know, and if you've listened to Cam talk, we were talking about it in the press room today. Cam mentions Hardegre and Callahan much more than he mentions Holtz. So, you know, I don't know if we're reading too much into that, but certainly it seems like he was bypassed. And McCoy was bypassed. McCoy, you know, called plays for 4 years and three different stints as an offensive coordinator. He didn't call plays during his 3 years as head coach in San Diego when he had guys like Frank Reich and Ken Wisenhunt, actually, as his offensive coordinator calling plays. It did make a little bit of sense what Callahan said about not going to McCoy, because McCoy hasn't been here very long, and Hardegre has been here for the whole thing. There's a little bit more continuity in moving to him. I agree with you, the next step's out the door. I wrote, you know, last night and this morning that it just puts them at such odds with their pledge to be patient. You know, I mean, if Callahan keeps being the story of games with his gaffes, well, then that overrules patience. But if he can get himself out of these scenarios by not being the play caller, where he's not making these gaffes with two timeouts and a delay a game before a go or kick a field goal kind of scenarios, maybe things settle down and they can be a little bit more patient. But, you know, I think people are far more anxious to see him fired than they are to see the Titans stick to their pledge of patience. But the stability thing is a big issue.
Now, not only are they not doing what they need to do on the field, coaches included, it just seems like the communication is off with the coaches and the players, or upper management and the players. Before Tavondre Sweat gets put on IR, Tavondre Sweat says, "I'm playing." And then 2 days later, he's on IR for 4 weeks. There's too much of that stuff going on in this organization.
I don't disagree with you, but I think on that one, Tavondre Sweat said, "I'm playing on Wednesday," and then I think he re-injured the ankle on Thursday. So I think on that one, it was just a matter of when we talked to him and when he hurt himself. But then it was weird that Callahan wouldn't offer that up on Friday like he usually does. I guess, you know, they could have bought themselves an extra day with Indianapolis, expecting to see Sweat, or 2 days with Indianapolis expecting to see Sweat. I always think that kind of stuff is overrated, but I understand it's part of NFL gamesmanship. And so, you know, whatever. I mean, I do think the players here, because people are so pissed at Callahan, mm-hmm. are getting off a little bit easily. I mean, Calvin Ridley struggles.
Yeah,
don't have a lot
awful,
to do
though.
With Callahan.
He's awful.
And
he's been awful.
And you've got a much better perspective on what goes into what he's doing. All these penalties, you know, as much as they had a theme about it, I think some guys are overmatched and feel they have no choice but to commit penalties in certain situations where they're asked to rely on their technique and they're incapable of doing so. And these missed tackles. I mean, Denard Wilson called out the safeties today, said they're the last line of defense. They need to make plays. I think the safety group's one of the best groups on the team, and they played like trash. Yes. You know, when you're one of your best position groups is flailing and can't tackle Jonathan Taylor, and your whole thing is we've got bigger edges and we're not going to get run against, and you're getting run against. I mean, those are some inherent problems with your personnel that go hand in hand with the coaching issues that you're having.
Paul Karski is with us, paulkarski.com. And Paul, I listened to the press conference twice because my theory is
you poor guy.
The gaffes that you refer to, and in particular, the game operations part, the
failure to review in week one on the Io Manor catch, and then the debacle at the end of the half of the indecision of whether to kick the field goal or go for it. That, to me, is why they did this. That's my theory anyway, much more so than what plays are being called. I feel like, I've always felt like, I know it's a trend in the league that a lot of head coaches call the plays, but some people are just not cut out to do it. And to me, this was maybe what forced it, the embarrassment of the end of the half on Sunday.
Well, certainly. I mean, Brian Callahan's been the story in two out of three games, the two things you mentioned, plus the backed up in their own end at Denver before the half and passing the ball three times and leaving room for Denver to come back and score a touchdown was terrible. So he's got three scenarios there where he mismanaged. And he wasn't doing these things last year. So I think he's tightened up. I think he's shrinking in the moment. And maybe taking play calls away allows him to focus on those things. Or maybe he's not a guy that's tailor-made for those moments. I know what the overriding opinion of the fan base is. But I think they're going to take more of a look. And then, look, we're going to find out. Amy Adams-Strunk has kind of sworn off of this stuff, right? She's given it to Brinker on the football side, and she's given it to Nihil on the non-football side. Is she going to let him, Brinker and Borgonzi, make this decision if there's a decision to be made? Or if things go terribly in Houston, where she lives in Waller, just outside of that, and we know the contempt that they have for the Texans over the whole getting out of Houston thing, is she going to get emotional and pop in? Or if Vrabel comes here and kicks their ass, is she going to get emotional and invest in the whole thing? And do people want her to? Or do people want what they've said they want and for her to stay out of football stuff?
But it clearly seems like every time that he's been asked about the play calling, he's like, no, I want to do it. So this clearly was not his idea to do it. I think he was maybe floated the idea in a previous time, and this time I don't think he was given a choice. But here to me, Paul, is another big part of this. With the Brinker infrastructure, if I'm Brian Callahan, I'm not happy. The buck stops with him. But I would be very disappointed in the people that he's put around him to assist. If you're going to be the play caller and be the guy who makes the big decisions, do we go for it, do we challenge? You got to have great people around you that are picking up the slack when you have to multitask and call the next play. I think they have done a terrible job in preparing him as a young head coach. And part of it, I guess, is his fault because he's choosing the people who he's putting around him. But the quote-unquote infrastructure they're putting.
I think so, too. And I think he's probably, Willie, got too many people in his ear. Like last year, he's probably got his dad, and he's probably got Holtz, right? And now he's got those two, and he's got McCoy. He's got Fassel, who's got some, you know, real strength to him and is probably pushing, you know, or in his ear about the field goal. And he's got Hardegree, who was there last year too. But and then he's got Reederer, who's his analytics guy, who botched the advice on Io Manor's catch. So, I mean, if he's got five people chiming in, they probably needed two more timeouts for everybody to get that thing straight.
But so how the analytics guy, right? Let's go to Reederer because I'm fascinated with him because nobody really talks to him or hears from him. But wouldn't analytics 10 times out of 10 tell you to go for it fourth and one on the 39 when you're down 17-6?
I certainly think so, and I think he should be erring on the side of aggression all the time. I think aggression versus conservative has gotten him tied up too many times just through three games this season already. Err on the side of aggression. You're not a very good football team. You know, you're not on track. Fourth and one, you should be able to convert. Look, Tony Pollard is getting some tough yards. I'd like to see him get a damn explosive play and not have his high be 11 yards through three games. But, I mean, your offensive line's supposed to be rebuilt. The interior is pretty good. Even with Hance, it was pretty good against Buckner and Stewart. You know, hell, or show some creativity and boot Ward out of there. Do something. But you got to be able to get a yard in that situation.
But the math, the emotion is one thing. The aggression, I agree with you 100% on that. But if you're doing analytics, it should be about math. And the math,
yeah,
to me,
the math
it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
especially in today's football. This isn't 1975 where you punt when it's fourth and one. Nobody punts when it's fourth and one, especially when you're down 17-6. So I don't understand how they even get themselves into these pickles somehow, because that's
also how many times are you going to send a guy on for a 60-plus yard field goal? I mean, hope that, you know, I know it's pretty. I don't really like this whole thing where 60-yard field goals are semi-automatic now. I think it makes for kind of a boring football that there's no tension in those kicks. But the Titans found a way for there to be tension in two of them.
Okay, last one for you, Paul, because I know you have other duties today. And I guess your students were making sure that you were going to make it to the class. They thought they might have the afternoon off, it seemed like.
Oh, I'll be there. I was getting a key for something from somebody else. I don't know how this operation works where I get into this extra room I need to be in.
Okay, here's the question. How much better, given we know the personnel issues that they have, and I'm feeling for Cam Ward right now because it can't be easy to call plays with this group, especially with some of the injuries on top of everything else, but how much better can the scheme look with a different guy, regardless of who the guy is, a different guy calling plays?
Well, I think, you know, we talked about it. Like, I think Callahan has some good plays, and I think he gets guys open. I think the sequencing sometimes is awkward. I mean, 3 out of 4 of their first downs, they ran for a yard. That's not good execution by the run blocking or by Pollard, but it's also not the most creative starts to drives to get them into these favorable situations that they're looking for. And then, you know, I think there was a series in the third or fourth quarter where they were kind of moving fast and he threw pretty well. He was throwing for 8, for 12, for 14, and they got 3 or 4 first downs. And then all of a sudden they go away from what was working and they stall pretty quickly. So even when you feel like they're moving the ball well, they don't sustain it for the length of the field at a point in the game where it still feels like it matters. Cam's got to do a better job. He said this, getting to his second read. Blake Bedingfield wrote for me, he feels like he stays on the first read too long, and then he skips over second and third and goes to the check down. So he's got to get past that. And he's holding the ball too long and contributing to some of those sacks. So I think some of those corrections will help the offense overall. But then your number one receiver's got to catch the ball. You know, and there are a lot of other things that are going on that aren't helping Cam be as good as Cam, I think, could be at this stage.
Paul Kaharsky of PaulKaharsky.com has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. You can hear him tomorrow morning during the 8 o'clock hour on Robbie and Rex Road. Paul, thank you so much for your time. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, boys.
Paul Kaharsky on the program, 615-737-1025, by the way, during our chat with Paul. The Tennessee Titans have made it official. The Titans have traded cornerback Jarvis Brownlee Jr. to the New York Jets. As part of the move, the two teams will swap late-round picks in the 2026 draft. The Titans will get a 6th-round pick from the Jets, who will get Brownlee, and a 7th-round pick from the Titans. And, of course, the big news of the day, Brian Callahan ceding play-calling responsibilities to quarterbacks coach Bo Hardegree. We want your reaction. 615-737-1025. We are flying by the seats of our pants today on a newsy day in Titans land. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.